The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that's right, Steven Fishback. It's a double episode of Survivor. Not a dud, Steven. Not a dud.
No, best episode of the season so far. Rob, were you singing along to the theme song?
Yeah.
Are you practicing for karaoke?
Practicing. Yeah. Having fun. I'm so pumped up. I'm so excited to talk about this double episode of Survivor because I had the lowest of expectations. I said, oh, well, it's probably at least one of the hours is going to be a dud. Yeah. And most likely that they probably said, okay, of all the nights we can do double eviction or double boot tribal council, let's put two crappy episodes together. Let's get to the merge. It's probably going to be slow. It's been slow these first couple of weeks. And then both hours, on its own, would have been a really exciting episode to talk about here. We had the loss of our first of the returning players in Aubrey, and lots to talk about there as we break down Aubrey Bracco coming out of the game. And then it was the return of the combined tribal council, and somewhere Mike Bloom is pointing and laughing as Big Wendy goes home in the double tribal council.
I totally get that reference, but can you remind all of our listeners who don't Mike Bloom is pointing and laughing?
Because that's what he did infamously when Malcolm went home during the live know-it-alls during Survivor Game Changer. So the first time in four seasons, the combined tribal council returns. And I thought that we saw some really great gameplay coming out of the combined tribal council tonight. And I can't wait to get into it and hear everything that Steven Fishback has to say about this. And I'm so pumped up to talk with you tonight, Steve.
And you didn't even mention all the chaos at Edge of Extinction.
The Edge is off the charts? It's off the chain.
Charts? How about off the charts?
Chain charts. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it's
out there.
Like the map kind
it's
of the Survivor
there.
sort of motif.
It's getting wild. Yeah. It's getting wild over on the Edge. We've got a lot to talk about here tonight as we break down two tribal councils and the end of the pre-merge, it looks like, as next week is going to be the merge. Somebody's going to come back from the Edge, it seems. Hashtag RHAP, get your questions into the show. And then we've got a great week of podcasts to break down this double episode that I'm going to speak with your friend and mine, Gabby Pascuzzi, is going to be back on the podcast to talk with me tomorrow about all of this. You can email questions into the show, survivor@robiswebsite.com. You can send leave us a voicemail too as well. But we got the feedback show coming up with another one of our great friends, Nick Iadanza, will be my guest. Talk to him on Friday afternoon, our time. It'll be Saturday for him, but it'll be Friday for me. And then over the weekend, we'll get into This Week in Survivor with Amon Adwin. And then Josh Wiggler will return to the Wiggle Room to break down the double episode here as we are set.
That's a real great lineup.
They all are.
But this one especially.
Yeah, it's a great week here, Steven. Okay,
Rob. So do you agree? I want to jump into definitely not the first thing you were planning on talking about.
Well, I was going to ask you how this is the one time a week I get to talk to you. How are you doing besides Survivor?
I'm good. I'm really good. I'm good. I mean, I have to get shoulder surgery in a month because of I have an injured shoulder.
I know.
So I've been wrestling with that. You know, just
are you in pain?
I'm in pain. It's not like horrible pain, but mm-hmm. I don't love getting surgery. You know, I don't think anyone loves getting surgery, but I've had quite a few of them. The idea of like, okay, we're going to put you to sleep. And you may just never wake up. You know, you're going to go under the anesthetic and like,
you'll be fine.
But like, there's still that thought as you're going under, like, this might be it. So it's always a little bit scary.
Well, this got really deep at the start of Survivor Edge of Extinction recap. And just to, it's good to put it all in perspective that all this is trivial. This is the toy store. We get to have fun as we distract ourselves from the bigger things in life. Yeah. Yes. But you'll be fine.
No, I will. But that's what's going on for me. I've been you know, dealing with that. What about you, Rob? What's happening in your life?
Everything is going great over here, and I'm really pumped up to get to come on here after we have like such an exciting night to get to talk about
hyped.
All this.
You're really hyped.
I know. I really am excited. Yeah. I'm very pumped up about this. Let's start with this combined tribal council, and then we'll talk about Aubrey in a bit. But Stephen, the combined tribal council, it ended up being Big Wendy, the person who went home. Did you agree with how the Lesu tribe played this?
Yeah, this seemed like kind of a no-brainer, right? I mean, you've got eight people, like, they're all talking about going to rocks, you know, and there's a few of them who are also talking about how they're going to betray each other. But there's one person between those eight people who really nobody is allied with, and so it totally makes sense for them all to vote her out.
Yeah, it was Wardog who first had the suggestion of, hey, let's vote out Wendy. And I felt like this was an up and down night for Wardog, but I felt like this was his finest point in the 2 hours tonight when, you know, he suggests that Wendy be the person to go out. But you have to give a big assist also to David Wright, who I think really this played to his strengths extremely well, where he's been to this situation before. Somehow all of these new players on Manu seem to just get, like, really talk themselves into the idea of, like, returning players don't go to rocks. They're gonna go and come back to on Survivor just to draw rocks. They don't do that. I thought that was a bad that they just like really talked themselves into something, like, with, unless Joe and Aubrey talked constantly about how they would never go to rocks as returning players, that I think that returning players are more likely to go to rocks, Stephen.
Yeah, I agree, because they're in it to win it, you know, like, I think the returning players, they've all come up short in one way or another, and they're all thinking, I want to be there at the end, and I'm going to do what it takes to get there. I mean, I all that said, like, I do think that different people have different neuroses when it comes down to it. You know, like, me coming back, I was like, I'll do anything so that I'm not in a losing spot. You know, Tasha coming back, she was like, I just want to be there at the end. So I think that, you know, I don't think you can generalize.
Sure, everybody's different, but I do think that the mindset of the returning player, especially when it's like, okay, this is the right move. Okay, you know, nobody's going to kill me for making the wrong move here. Right, I know that the right move is to stick with my tribe here. So if I, like, I'll leave it to chance. And I feel like that the first time player is more likely to, I don't know if I'm ever going to get another chance to play this game.
Right.
And this could be my Survivor, you know, career here out on day 15 with a rock. And that's the end of me on Survivor. And I think that the first time player is more likely to flip.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just do not, and you know, returning players have seen time and time again how the person who flips just does not end up winning. So I totally agree. There wasn't really any like rationale for that insight, right? That returning players don't go to rocks.
But. Yeah, they just that. I think that Victoria was the first one to say it, but then, you know, Eric and Gavin were like, yeah, that makes complete sense. Definitely. The returning players not going to go to rocks.
It seemed like wishful thinking. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, David Wright, I thought, did such a great job, and I have to feel like that he knew what he was doing there, where that he almost had Wendy sign her own death warrant in the game, where when he stood up and said, Wendy, can I come talk to you? And then it wasn't so much he talked to Wendy, but when Wendy whispered back into his ear, I felt like it's like, yeah, what is she telling him? And I think that anybody who saw Game Changers knows, you know, not to say that anybody misplayed that night in any one way or another, Stephen. We don't need to rehash any of that. But I felt like that there was so much whispering, and I felt like that we as viewers were sort of in the minds like, yeah, what is Kelly saying to Wardog? Okay, now, okay, what is Lauren saying to this person? And you really have to wonder. And once she's talking to David, it's like, all right, let's just see. Let's just, you know, get out of this alive.
Well, but she wasn't fooled by him. And I actually think, like, for me,
who wasn't fooled by him?
Wendy wasn't fooled by David.
She was fooled enough to not say, hey, get out of my face. Anything you have to say to me, you can say in front of these people.
I don't think you ever said. I think if anyone at any point on Survivor said, hey, get out of my face, we would be like, this is a mistake.
I think that I really felt like that when Wendy went and was whispering into David Wright's ear, I felt like that sealed it. Like, okay, when push comes to shove, she's not one of us. We can't trust her. And I think if she would have made the point of saying, like, hey, I don't want to whisper with you. You say what you have to say in front of my people. I think it would have given them pause.
Right.
Maybe not the ultimate decision, but I think that maybe. I mean, they, for all their talk about let's go to rocks, they pulled the ripcord.
Yeah. Well, I also think a part of me thinks that was also because, I mean, A, Wendy is a very recent addition to that tribe, and as they have already commented, something of a tribe problem, in as much as she's like not letting them eat the chickens. Now they can go back to their tribe and eat as many chickens as they want with Wendy out of the game.
I think they gotta catch them first.
Well, right, but these chickens are just like walking through the confessional interviews. You know, you just get, as soon as you got all you need to do to catch a chicken is just set up an interview, and then the chicken will come walking
yes,
through.
Yes, yeah. The chickens have many confessionals this season.
Yeah. But I actually thought it was, as much as anything, it was a testament to how much tribal council experience helps you at tribal council. You know, you could kind of see how sort of like they were like newborn deer, you know, these Manu people. They like didn't totally know their way around tribal, whereas these Lesu guys are killers.
I disagree with that, because they did a great job in that first hour.
In the first hour, they did a great
really
job.
Really pulling
right.
the wool over Aubrey's yes. eyes, where Aubrey, who is a grizzled Survivor veteran, was completely blindsided. So they did a really good job of not even letting Aubrey catch wind. So maybe in terms of, you know, this being the more tense tribal council for them, but you know, these guys I think cut their teeth in that first blindside.
Yes totally. Yeah, but really people are saying how great the double tribal was. I thought it was not that great.
Oh, I thought it was great. I really did. And I thought that this was where in the Malcolm, you know.
Yeah, that was a great tribal. Like, nothing lives up to that.
That was a great tribal. And we saw where Malcolm ends up going home in a complete blindside. Malcolm was, you know, a big favorite to win the season. A lot of people had him as a winner pick. And it was, you know, a gut punch when Malcolm ends up going out. And while Big Wendy was a huge character in the season, and I'm happy that we'll get to see, you know, her continue. I actually thought there was a chance that she might not go to Edge of Extinction because she's Big Wendy, and you know, it's hard to like really assign logic to her. But especially when she's like, okay, shower.
Cheeseburger. She said, okay, shower. Cheeseburgers. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure she misspoke and meant veggie burger.
Veggie burger, right.
But I was like, I have no idea. Is she gonna go or not? Especially since she got lost on the way to the signpost.
Yeah.
But
she's not good with paths.
She's not. That's not her strong suit.
Yeah.
But I do feel like that. And thinking back to that double tribal council from Survivor Game Changers, I'm wondering if whatever was the version of the, you know, Aubrey JT tribe with Malcolm and Sandra. Whether they didn't go after Haley Ford in that tribal council, and she was the person who was their original tribe mate, who then was voting with the new people. And I wonder if they would have had that same idea that they had with Big Wendy, where if to target Haley Ford as sort of like, last one in, first one out, and go after the person who was their original tribe mate.
Haley was on Culpepper's tribe, right? That's what you're talking about?
She was, but she started, I believe she was on the original Mana tribe in that season.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, but I think that people like the emergent gameplay, I think, has caught up to how to play this.
But I also do think it's really situational, right? It's like if you've got one person who neither tribe is particularly allied to, yeah, then vote that person out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other version where you have an idol and someone literally tells you who they're voting for, like, that's an easier one to play.
Mm-hmm. I thought that both times Survivor has done it, I think it's been really exciting.
Exciting.
I kind of forgot that Survivor had this as like something to, pull out of the, I don't know what you would, toolbox? What would you call this?
Yeah, that's what I would call it.
Yeah. I thought this was really fun and much more fun than had both tribes gone to tribal council separately. It was, a lot of game talk beforehand. There was a lot of different outcomes where Lauren says, hey, if the vote is for War Dog, I am not pulling rocks for War Dog. We saw Victoria say like, hey, don't trust me. I'm not going to go to rocks for these people. I'll flip. I'll figure my way out of this thing. So based on whoever, the tribes were going to vote for, I thought this was really a lot of fun.
Yeah. Okay, you're right. And it really was not. I think the planning and the scheming leading up to it was fun. Like the actual vote where it was like, okay, we're obviously going to just vote for this person. Like to me, that didn't seem as like wild or chaotic. It was just such a no-brainer. After you had that split vote, hey, why don't we all vote for the person who none of us are lied to?
Mm-hmm. Look, Steven, that you have too big of expectations. This was exciting.
No, what I'm not saying. I knew I thought it was exciting. For the merge. I didn't think it was exciting. It was good.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
So I thought that this was a really, really great tribal and a fitting end for Big Wendy, who did say in the first hour, hey, if I go home, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
And she had a great exit also out the door where she says to Big Jeff, please, can you call me Big Wendy? And he obliges.
You called him Big Jeff?
Did I say Big Jeff?
You call him Big Jeff. I like that. Maybe they'll catch
maybe
on.
Maybe I'm just getting all of my big people confused. Yeah. But
no,
Big
I like
Wendy
that. Big Jeff.
Said, hey, call me Big Wendy on the way out the door. And Josh Wiggler told the story on the Wiggle Room, I think, after the premiere, where Big Wendy on the boat to open the season requested that Jeff call her Big Wendy. And Jeff said, nope, we're not doing it. We got too many nicknames on this season.
Wow, really?
Yep, we're not doing it. We got a War Dog.
Wow, is a War Dog gets War Dog and she doesn't even get big?
We're not doing any more nicknames.
Oh my God.
We are nicknamed out.
So this is a lesson to all future Survivor players. If you want the nickname, you got to really jump in there and just like, you got to be the first one. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that she gets Big Wendy on the way out the door. And I wonder, now going to the Edge of Extinction, is she Big Wendy the rest of the season?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So,
would you have a nickname, well, the Rob that sucks? Would you be like, Jeff, call me the Rob that sucks?
Yes. I think if there were multiple Robs, I feel like that would help to then really bring
minimize
my
your threat level.
Down.
Exactly. Yeah. I like
right.
that. Idea.
Jeff, could you call me Stupid Rob? Stupid Rob who stinks at Survivor? The worst player ever, who's not a threat, Rob. Yeah, could I get that nickname? Yeah. Also,
yeah, smart.
Yeah,
that's the meta game.
I thought that was exciting in the double tribal council, the combined tribal council, Stephen. And then our other headline, big story at this hour: Aubrey out of the game, and Aubrey says. This was a tough pill to swallow for Aubrey. She compares it to the ultimate embarrassment, JT style embarrassment.
Listen, I was very sad about Aubrey going out, but we don't need to like drag JT's name through the mud. It's really unnecessary. JT just went out with one advantage in his pocket, FYI.
I don't even think he had it in his pocket. I don't
or
think
whatever,
he brought it to
tribal. Buried at camp. Yeah. Yeah. Is it better or worse to like not bring it at all to tribal or to not play a tribal when you need it?
I think it's probably worse to just not play it.
To have it but not play it.
I think it's worse not to bring it because I think that like, why
shows,
did
like,
you not
late
bring it?
Carelessness, like, right? Like why didn't you?
I think that if you don't play, you have it, you don't play it. It's like okay, I got tricked. I mean, you tricked yourself by not bringing it to tribal council.
You played yourself. It's a little, but that's very abstract. Sometimes it's
my, you played yourself.
It's my the challenge that I faced with my thing was that. You got to go dig it up. You know, it's not just like you, the thing magically, if you, it magically appears in your bag. If you bury it, you got to go get it. And that can be like, you know, its own logistical headache.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's not get in the weeds of what to do with your idol when you have one. Yeah. But for Aubrey, that I did feel like that this was a little bit anticlimactic in terms of Aubrey going home, because I felt like that the story we got was so one-sided of Aubrey's POV.
Yeah.
That here's what Aubrey is doing. And we didn't really get to see the other people that Aubrey was working with, you know, talking about any other plan other than, okay, we're just going to blindside Aubrey.
Right. I hear you. I actually kind of liked it. I think we often give Survivor crap for, oh, it's always like, you know, that they don't show us sometimes a full-fledged story because they're so focused on the, like, is it X or is it Y thing. And I thought this, like, taking a different tack this time where you really got inside Aubrey's perspective, even as it did look like she was about to be blindsided, I thought that was kind of new and refreshing, to be honest with you. It wasn't about, is it going to be Aubrey or not? It was more like, how is it going to be Aubrey?
Yes. So you felt like that you're sitting there watching, this is like 100% Aubrey is, you know, going to the edge of extinction tonight.
And well, I didn't think 100%. I mean, you know, there was always the chance that it would be Wendy, and Aubrey had an idol. So there was always the chance that she would play that. And then this extra vote, and who knew how that could affect things. But I really liked that they took a slightly different, you know, because it is typically like, we could do Aubrey or we could do Wendy. Which is it? And you know, I think we often, like I was saying before, like I think we often criticize Survivor for really, you know, we don't see as much of the player's mentality because they do have that need to do that. And so here they're doing something different. And I liked it. You know, they really showed these new players who had this plan. They put the plan into action. And meanwhile, you also get Aubrey's perspective, who is pretty much completely gulled by this plan, right? Totally fooled. And and you know, but at the same time, she's kind of in her head, she's putting her plans into action. So I thought it was a little bit different, and I kind of liked it.
Yeah, for Aubrey, that she goes through the conversation. It's Victoria who says to her, hey, I want to work together. And probably for Aubrey, she's just so excited to hear somebody saying that they want to work with her for the, you know, first time in this game. It looks like that she has the opportunity to do something. And this is the plan that Victoria has with Gavin and with Erica of, okay, let's tell Aubrey that we'll get this girls thing going. But then it ends up hitting a bump in the road where Big Wendy comes bump. In and Aubrey says to Big Wendy, okay, let's talk shop here. So I need to know, you know, what kind of player are you in this game? And Big Wendy is kind of like, what now?
Yeah, what game are you referring to here?
We want to know, are you open to doing something, to you working together on a vote? And where are you? Where would you like to go from here? I mean, basically, like, Aubrey is kind of saying to her, and I don't know what conversations Victoria and Eric and Gavin had with Big Wendy prior to this, but I mean, it kind of was like, hey, do you want to get voted out tonight? Or yeah. Should we vote out somebody else? And Big Wendy was like, yeah.
I think she must have at that point known that Aubrey was going home. I just think she's not going to like, she's not good at doing the Survivor thing of like creating the fake plant, right? I assume that she just had to know by then. Otherwise, like, it would just be totally crazy. And I don't think Wendy is totally crazy.
Yeah. I thought that Gavin was also really, really strong in that tribal council. It was weird that we saw a lot of Gavin in the first hour and then more Eric in the second hour with this new Manu tribe. But, you know, Jeff asked Gavin a bunch of questions, you know, like pointed questions about working with Aubrey. And he was just like, you know, it's so great to have Aubrey around and she's somebody like this. This is the kind of person you want to work with. And, you know, we get so much guidance from Aubrey. And he like aced every single question to the point where Aubrey was feeling just, you know, super comfortable with this group. And ultimately it was going to be this big betrayal and total blindside for Aubrey.
And Eric too, you know, he like repeated what Aubrey had said about forge this four and fire, you know? So I think they both did a really great job. All of them did a really great job. you also have to give credit to Wendy here, right? We've certainly seen people in that position in the past screw things up when, you know, everyone's talking about this big fake plan and how this four is tight. And then the person who is the decoy boot gets nervous and messes it up. I mean, you know, the Keith Nail stick to the plan thing is the classic mm-hmm. example of that, right? But Wendy, you know, does not flinch.
Well, Wendy is just, you know, too in her own big Wendiness to even be, you know, thinking about what the other plans are.
I don't know. I think you got to give her more credit than that. I think she's doing the right thing here and that we should, like, applaud her.
I will wait and see, like, what the, you know, secret scenes bear out. I think that, you know, it's that's an assumption that I'm not necessarily willing to make yet.
Aubrey's mistake here, I think, and I wrote a little bit about this in my blog, is that we had a few confessionals from Aubrey this episode where she referred to the other players on her tribe as not really playing the game. She talked about the Kool-Aid players being totally asleep. And then when Victoria talks to her, she says, oh my gosh, I guess Victoria was awake after all. She's like surprised. And this is 12 days into Survivor, and she's just kind of assuming that all of her tribe mates are asleep and not playing the game. And I think that's a classic Survivor mistake where if you that, you know, not giving your tribe mates credit for playing the game and having schemes of their own. And I typically when, you know, when you're not aware of what their schemes are, it's about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good reminder, good point for people. It's just, you know, hard to, you know, imagine that known unknown of that the other people are talking, but what are they talking about? Because they're clearly not talking in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, in general, like, everyone, you know, everyone on Survivor, for the most part, like, has a plan, right? Everyone is doing the thing, for the most part. Everyone is doing the thing that they perceive as being in their best interest at that point in time. And you know, so it's like, I think that, you know, considering other players as being asleep or not playing is really dangerous.
So,
and I've been victim to that too. I mean, I think it's easy when you're out mm-hmm. there and you get in your own head of, like, all your great schemes and how am I going to make my plans pay off? You know, and, oh, now I've got my idol. Now I've got my other thing, you know, and you're like just so in your own head about how it's all going to work. You forget to kind of like extend that empathy to the other players. Mm-hmm.
And look, I feel like I can relate to what Aubrey must have gone through being with these players here for, you know, 14, 15 days, whatever it was before she gets voted out. Because it's very similar to my Survivor All-Stars experience where it felt like, boy, nobody's really talking about the game.
Yeah.
That whatever conversations we're having, like, oh, should we just get rid of Rob? Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Okay, good. All right, we're done here. And so they were just like very, very open and shut conversations that were had about get rid of me. And to me, it's like, boy, this is nothing like the Amazon. All we did was talk about the game. There's a lot of strategy talk there. And this seems like, I don't know what these guys are doing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's it. I think that's like when it seems like nobody's talking, they are talking and it's about you.
And sometimes it's a very quick conversation that they're having.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a lot when it's tribe. It's
easy decision.
Do you think, did Aubrey, other than that, do you think that what could Aubrey have done to save herself in this situation? I mean, she comes in,
play her idol.
Well, right. But I mean, in terms of like her position in the game, did she screw up in some crucial way? Like
what else could she have done other than play her idol? I mean, she says she was going to, she was talking about making a move. She talks to Big Wendy and Big Wendy is like, what?
But Aubrey thought she's on top.
Yeah. Oh, yes. She thought that, hey, okay, well, let's just get rid of Wendy because I can't work with somebody like this.
I mean, I know that, like, looking back, we say Aubrey should have played her idol. Do you think Aubrey should have seen it coming? I guess that's my question to you.
Aubrey seemed to get the hint in the original version of Kama that people were trying to knock her out of the game. But I think that she must have gotten enough assurance from this group that they were going to stick together, Kama strong. They had Big Wendy as that perfect person to get rid of. And it just seemed like it made too much sense to be able to just take out Big Wendy. And so I think that Aubrey was hopeful that it was going to work out that way. They didn't know for a fact that she had her idol. And so I think she felt like that she could have played it. I think also that she had the advantage. Also, she talked about how she doesn't know how to play from ahead. She knows how to play from behind and be the underdog.
She was the underdog. She wasn't the head.
Well, that, I think that must be confusing when it's like, wait, okay. Oh, right. Now I have all these advantages. What do I do? I don't want to misplay them. And so that's another thing factoring in. But, you know, sad to see Aubrey go out because I really thought she had turned a corner in the game when she got to this tribe swap.
I talked a little bit about this in my blog, but I'm curious what you think. It seems like Joe and Aubrey are having very different fates on their respective tribes than Wentworth and David. Do you have thoughts about why that might be the case? What are Wentworth and David doing where, like, basically the entire, you know, original Manu tribe has been voted out of the game?
Yes.
They're somehow still here. What are they doing differently?
So Wentworth and David voted out all of the first-time players and Joe and Aubrey let all of the first-time players stay around, and so that they could gang up on them. So,
they outlasted
all the people that wanted to vote them out.
But what did they do? You know, so Joe and Aubrey became big targets. Obviously, Wentworth and David somehow avoided being targets. What did they do differently?
So I really think that what ultimately ended up benefiting them, and I love where David Wright and Kelly Wentworth are also. I'm very excited about this season, which sort of like was like a little, was very slow. But we had this whole like, oh, Wentworth versus David Wright, this whole war and these factions. But now all of a sudden, David Wright and Kelly Wentworth are working together.
It's really fun, especially because Wentworth just like can't stand anybody. This is my favorite iteration of Wentworth.
I love it so much because it's like one of my favorite things where, you know, it's like rivals who have to work together.
It's like Kasaya, right? Like where they all hated each other, but they like they still stuck strong together.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. And I do think that where David Wright and Kelly, they weren't a united front to start. And I don't think that this was anybody's master plan or how they drew it up, because we got to see how this whole thing unfolded where David Wright wanted to vote out Kelly and then Chris told Wardog the plan and the whole thing fell apart. But they each sort of like had their factions and they sort of like had like warring factions, and they were lucky enough that they had, you know, really, squeaky wheels in, you know, Reem and Keith and Big Wendy that were able to be sort of, you know, targets and distract the votes to the point where then they were sort of like, ultimately, we have to work together in terms of David and Kelly. Whereas Joe and Aubrey were a united front from the get-go. And I think that by the fact that Joe and Aubrey, if Joe and Aubrey would have been maybe throwing out each other's names, even as a decoy, just to sort of like, test the waters a little bit, that maybe it wouldn't have united the new players as much. Whereas that I think that it was not like by design, but because David and Kelly were, and David's targeting of Kelly and the fact that they were losing so much, I think forced them to not necessarily be seen as a tandem.
Yes, I totally agree. That's exactly what I said. The fact that they were against each other kind of split their tribe in two. So you had these different factions, you know, one more with Kelly, one more with David. And as a result, there wasn't that sense of like those two guys are united and we need to take them out. There wasn't that fear of them as this force working together, because certainly David was clearly targeting Kelly. It wasn't as clear that Kelly was targeting David, but there did seem to be two primary groups. And then, yeah, the squeaky wheel part, you know, the fact that you had Reem, the fact that you had Keith, these people who, you know, and, you know, that Keith, Reem, Wendy group that kind of self-segmented in a way that didn't really happen on the Common Tribe. But I do think that, the fact, like, I wonder if Aubrey and Joe had come in and sort of even pretended to be against each other.
It's counterintuitive.
It is. But I think it really would have helped.
Yeah. So see if Survivor ever does this type of thing again, where you have the captains or a pair to maybe what you want to do is like sort of like not, you know, act like we're, you know, we've got a problem, you know, when they have like a we're know-it-alls captains and we're taking on, you know, the Russell and Johnny Fairplay tribe. And then we'll act like we're not getting along.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think that would be... Now, you know that allegedly Coach and Randy had this plan in Heroes versus Villains. That's how they were going to play Heroes versus Villains. They were
I thought Coach and Tyson had this plan.
Coach had a lot of plans, but I know he and Randy had this idea where they were going to like pretend to hate each other. And then this was going to be their storyline of the season, was their growing friendship.
Okay. Didn't
really pan out, but
didn't really pan out. But back to David and Kelly. Then, how exciting is it also that now Kelly Wentworth has the idol?
Sneaky, sneaky.
Steve, I haven't talked a ton about that. I loved where Kelly Wentworth was in this game.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, here we are, and Underdog Wentworth is back.
Yeah.
She's coming into the merge. She's got both, you know, Lauren and War Dog like vying to be her number one.
Yeah.
She's got David right now as another person with her. She's got the idol. She's coming into the merge down in the numbers. And guess what? That Kelly Wentworth is the classic Wentworth positioning.
Yeah, no, it's great. Totally, totally in an underdog spot.
She's coming into her own.
Yeah.
She's back, baby.
I really like the exasperated Wentworth iteration. Like, to me, it's really, really funny. Everyone's like, why is she so mad all the time and she's a villain? I get so much delight out of her just like total frustration with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I enjoy her suffering. I just think it's really funny.
Yes, so Kelly Wentworth has found the idol tonight. She shares that information with Lauren on the heels of Aubrey finding the idol. Steven, does Survivor need to take a look at the way that they're hiding the idols, that the men on Survivor have found 0% of the idols since the middle of December of last year? And frankly, maybe this is something that people should be talking a little bit more about.
Yeah, four consecutive women idol finds. It's pretty great.
Yes. Are they hiding the idols in places that the men can't find them?
The one with today with Kelly and Wardog was nuts, where Wardog was basically literally looking at it, and then Kelly found it.
Yeah, it was like exactly how like Angelina planted like the fake idol she wanted Allison to find by just like walking past it. Like, I don't know how people did not just stumble upon that idol just walking around the camp.
Yeah.
Okay. So many other things from this episode tonight. Okay. Let's talk about what's going on the edge. And boy, I felt very bad for Aubrey. But then to have Aubrey there with this super dysfunctional family and Keith and Chris, and she doesn't know any of these people from a hole in the wall. And now here she is living with them and they are at each other's throats.
Well, the Reem Chris blow up was like the craziest, because so what happened was, right, like they were looking for the latest advantage or whatever it was. Reem saw it, pointed it out. Keith, you know, sneaky Keith grabbed it out from under her, and Chris was just like, oh wow, so you sort of gave it to him, like, just
what? Yeah. what are you saying? Oh, like gave it to him, is that what you're saying right now, dude? Is that what you're saying, bro?
I was literally
you're gonna light up a volcano right now, dude.
I can't even with you, Steven,
cut it out right now. I swear to God, bro, I swear to God.
Hey, your rim is quite good.
Work on it.
Yeah. Are you in the mirror at home, like just like doing
I don't know. It's a podcast. I don't look in the mirror. I'm not like doing her face.
Yeah, but you know, just like to. Yeah. But some of it has to be facial, right? You're getting your face in the right, you know, trying to channel the right emotions.
No, I don't do the mirror. I don't do anything with the mirror. But Steven, that it was so funny in the first hour where then they had this thing, which was like the Mad Magazine fold. Yeah. And then Devin's finds in, like, and they're like, okay, as a group, we'll go out and we'll we'll go like, let's have lunch. And then Keith is like, nah, and he just ran for it. And they were like two separate things going on. And Keith was just like, screw everybody.
Yeah.
And Keith, that is
the correct, by the way, like, clearly that's the right thing. Like, at this point, that could be like, here's your ticket back into the game. Like, why the heck would he wait for everybody else?
And Keith hates Chris. Keith and Reem really just hate Chris. Chris seems like the nicest guy, has not said a bad word to anybody on this season, and Reem and Keith are just cannot stand this guy.
Well, I think it's like, you know, you don't hate anyone so much as the person who betrays you, right? Your enemies don't bother you as much as the person who betrays you. And I think the fact that Chris, you know, really seemed to hold out hope for Keith and his
elimination. But what was that scene last week where he catches the fish and Reem's like, okay, I like Chris today, dude, well, you're all right, dude.
I don't think there was any scenario other than Chris finding that disadvantage where it wasn't going on Chris, right? Like, every single one of those people is going to put it on Chris. I'm very hopeful for Devin's coming back into the game. You know, I assumed it would be Chris, but like, this extra knot complication,
yes,
it really could be Devin's.
So a lot of different things end up getting found tonight on the Edge
Three
of Extinction,
things.
Which we didn't know this, but turns out the Edge of Extinction is kind of like an escape room where yeah, you get exactly. clues. And then you open things and you get more things, and then you get like a map that you have to put on different places. So it looks like that the actual competition appears to be the classic Survivor jailbreak competition, which we saw in the original iteration of the Outcast back in Survivor Pearl Islands. And I believe it was also the first challenge ever done on Survivor Redemption Island between Francesca and Wyatt Nash. Way back when. And I think it's going to be some sort of like, you know, putting a poll together, and then you have to get your key out to be able to get back into the game. We should see that next week. Then we saw Devin's found an advantage where he could send an extra vote to another player in the game.
Yeah, let's talk about that choice.
Yeah. And I'm saying to myself, okay, well, this is a no-brainer. He's going to send it to David Wright.
Well, it had to be someone who lost the next immunity challenge.
Did it? Did it
yes.
say that? I mean,
I believe he read out loud that you can send it to someone who loses the next immunity challenge.
Somebody in the chat, let me know if that was the
case. I'm almost positive that it said that. And then the thing, yeah, I'm basically positive it said that.
Okay. So that was a big surprise to me that Aubrey was the person who got it.
Well, even like, I mean, why not send it? I mean, obviously, Wendy is Wendy, but I still think, send it to Wendy. You know, Wendy was hung by you for so many votes at Manu, and she's the only one that you know in that group. Why would you give it to Aubrey? You've never even met her before.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe felt like that. David Wright was like, hey, I'm tight with Aubrey. I'm going to work with Aubrey. Chad is saying that, okay, Steven is right. Steven is right. Okay.
I mean, do you have to say that? Isn't that just the baseline?
It should be assumed. Yeah. So then the third thing that ends up happening is, okay, you can give more knots to a person who is going to be there. Now, one, we had Keith, who is just like grabbing things left and right. I guess that maybe this is kind of payback, because Keith was getting close to finding the thing, and then Chris like dove in and found the thing that said, hey, use this to practice.
Oh, right.
Which in hindsight might end up costing him his shot to get back into the game once Keith gives him 100 knots in the challenge coming up next week.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, that thing was going on Chris no matter what.
Mm-hmm, no matter what. So, we had the great fight with Reem versus Chris. Steven, did you have any thoughts about Aubrey's advantage and Idol on the Edge?
Whether
what happens to those things?
Well, didn't we decide last week that the Idol is no longer in play, that the note in the Idol says
we didn't decide, but the screen capture of Aubrey's note
resolved yes, last week, yeah.
Yes, that this is a void when voted out. So now, does Aubrey get to keep that stuff? Could that be a potential fake idol in the game?
Yeah, I don't know.
So
that's the wrong guy. Ask
we'll
Jeff. Ask Big Jeff.
Well, ask Big Jeff. Yeah. Okay. I don't think that he would mind being called Big Jeff.
Yeah.
Would you rather be called Jeff, Jeffrey, or Big Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, Big Jeff is a no-brainer.
Yeah. Let's talk about Joe. Tommy Joe tonight.
Yeah, I love
and,
Tommy Joe.
You know, we did not get to see a ton about Joe in the first hour. Actually, a little bit about Joe, but then we saw more of the other players talking about Joe in the first hour, and more about Joe from his own perspective after reacting to Aubrey being voted out in the second hour. It did seem like some of the players have had an about face on voting Joe out, Stephen.
Yeah, Ron specifically had an about face. Julia, same face. Julia, first confessional for Julia, by the way, worth acknowledging.
Killed it.
Yeah, right. It was a pretty generic confessional. I mean, I joked on Twitter that the editors were trolling us by giving us the most positive, because like there was so much complaining about where's Julia's confessional that they were going to give us the most like generic possible confessional. It's like winning the challenge is great.
Yeah, I know you're joking around, but you know I think these episodes are edited way in advance.
Oh no, I've been thinking there's wiggle room to include a confessional here or there.
Yeah. So Joe, very sad. Doesn't understand. He just wants to play. And why does everybody always want to vote him out?
I thought that his response to this actually was the best possible strategy for Joe. Because, like, what do you do if you're Joe, right? You're not going to, like, convince the rest of the tribe that somebody is a bigger threat than you. Everyone knows you're the biggest threat. So what you do is you say, hey, you are also a huge threat. And everyone knows you're a huge threat, too. So you have to keep me in the game as a meet you.
Yeah. You're talking about Julia in the second hour?
Yeah.
I thought Julia came off very naive in that conversation where Joe says to her, like, hey, you know, you're a threat.
I think everyone thinks
like,
of themselves as a threat.
Joe just said, I'm a threat?
I don't know.
Hey, he's making a lot of sense now. We can't get rid of Joe. Then I'll be a threat.
I mean, you know, we don't have a confessional from her confirming that she's now nervous.
She
about
did that, Stephen. That we do. She said, and you know, so be careful what you wish for with these confessionals, because now we know what you think. But she said, "Hey, this is going to changing the whole way I'm thinking about the game." If Joe said I'm a threat.
Well, look, I mean, and like I said, I think that's a really smart strategy for Joe, is like to convince other people that they are threats too, and therefore they need him in the game to protect them. I think, like, I don't know what a good strategy for Joe. I think this is the, like, because, like, what do you do in that situation when you are Joe? You're obviously the biggest threat out there. I think this is the best thing he could do. I can't, like, can you think of another good strategy for Joe?
Yeah, flip to Wentworth and David. Be a number for the other side.
Right. I'm actually, that's pretty good. But in the short term, before he gets to that point.
Well, I think that, I think that he did what he could. Win all the challenges, never go to tribal council. He nailed it. Perfect job there by Joe. Again, going a perfect 6-for-6 in the pre-merge, following up his, 7-for-7 in Cambodia. Now is going to be the hard part. And so I'm sure on the podcast this week, we'll take a real look at what's going on here at the merge. And I wonder, is it possible that now, it's almost like I wonder that we have, you know, these four people that are coming out of Manu in Kelly, David, Lauren, and Wardog. Okay, so that is the sort of like the on the nose obvious four that are going to be targeted. Could we see there be a fight for one half of Kama? Will Kama come back and reemerge? And we're going to see somebody come back from the edge, and it could be another person from the original Manu if it's not Aubrey. So could that person be another number for Manu? And then plus Joe, and then maybe one other person. I'm not sure if we have the majority yet, because I'm just speaking extemporaneously.
Yeah. What's her name? Aurora.
Yeah.
So it's
Joe and Aurora,
like 13,
Joe and
Aurora
switch
merge
over to Manu, and now I think you got something.
Yeah, you got 4, 5, 6. 4, 5, 6, 7. You're right. That would be a real flip.
Yeah. So I think that for Joe to stay calm and strong, I think would be a mistake, because I think that once Manu is eliminated, then Joe is the, seventh, eighth place, where, he's gone out previously.
Yeah. And Joe, I think, is in the interesting position where, like, he just needs to get to the end. You know, he's one of these guys who, like, I debated this with my own compatriots in Cambodia. Like, I always said, if Joe gets to the end, he deserves to win. Other people disagree. Other people didn't have that perspective. But I feel like if Joe can overcome the incredible hurdle of him getting to the end, that's a miracle.
Yeah. And we've seen people like Brad Culpepper who won four or five immunity challenges and, sort of just like win out to the end and then the jury not vote in that person's favor. So it's not necessarily that, a slam dunk just because somebody has won if they didn't have necessarily the social connections that they're going to automatically
win. But I do think with Joe, it's slightly different where he's so dominant. I mean, Culpepper won a lot of challenges, but like Joe is like so completely dominant. I mean, he's, I think in this episode, actually, I think he was literally carrying his tribe on his back. But he's so dominant in the pregame that, like, it's not where, with Culpepper, you're like, this is a really fit guy. He's a big threat. With Joe, it's like that guy is the dominant figure in the physical part.
Okay. Steven, who'd you give the fishy to tonight?
Victoria, who we didn't talk about.
Whoa.
The devious Victoria.
Yes. Do you give two fishies for the double episode or one for the entire 2 hours?
I mean, I let myself, I let the whims of time, of how much time I have to write the blog, decide. Mm-hmm. And so it was one. It was Victoria.
Okay. I can't argue with that for the first hour. I feel like we should be a little stingy.
No, she did a great job, I thought.
No, I think you could have given one out for the second hour.
You write that. I'll send it to my editors as an addendum.
Send it as an addendum. And I think it should be go to War Dog and with an assist from David Wright. That's
War Dog, by the way, had a... I thought he had a terrible second hour with basically everyone...
I'm only talking about the tribal council.
Yeah. But, in terms of the challenge stuff, that was funny. But also... he really alienated a lot of his tribe with his relentless
scheming. I said it was an up and down
scheming.
Night for War Dog. Yeah. We really saw, Kelly for the first time really be like, shades of like, who is this jackass?
Yeah.
It was
who is this Velacha? So she said.
Yes, yeah. Says that he is going full Tony. I thought it was really funny that, this Lesu tribe never be the person who walks away from the other three. It's probably true all the time on Survivor, but they talk a lot of crap. And it's very like, what's with this guy?
Yeah.
Boy, he stinks in the challenges, right? He doesn't do anything.
Can you imagine?
And we heard War Dog says that about David. Like Kelly says it about David. David said it about War Dog. War Dog says it about Lauren.
I mean, these guys have been together nonstop for 2 weeks. They have won almost nothing, right? Like in terms of the rewards, they're probably, they've got the worst beach, right? They have the terrible tribe beach. Like they probably are eating and sleeping almost negligibly. Mm-hmm. Like their brains must just be like on, about to shut down.
Yeah. Okay. Steven, your brain's not going to shut down, right? Never.
Okay. I hope not.
All right. We're going to start to get to your questions. Anything else you want to say before we jump over there?
No, we hit it.
Okay. All right. I'm sure we'll come up with anything else from our notes. But first, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the Double Vote Out Recap.
Those friends.
It are friends over at AIS, the auto insurance specialist.
Oh.
And look, like as Aubrey could tell you, you need insurance. And you want to make sure you're not paying too much for the car insurance, and these insurance companies, when you're not looking, they try to jack up your rates every time it renews. They sure you're that frog in that pot of water that's getting hotter and hotter and hotter, and the insurance companies are banking on the fact that you're not looking at that statement and not checking it out. Well, give AIS a call and give them all your information about your car, how much you're driving. Sometimes people have a change in their work situation where they're not driving as much. You're paying for miles that you're not using on your car insurance. Give AIS a try, and they've got their smart quote technology to shop the rates of dozens of insurance companies. You could check out a new rate in just a few seconds. You'll give yourself the fishy for doing such a good job of making sure that either A, you are now saving money on your insurance and you can buy much more fun stuff than car insurance, or B, give yourself a pat on the back because you might already have the lowest rate, but you could sleep better at night knowing that when you get a hold of AIS, the auto insurance specialist. Go to AISinsurance.com/Rob. It's the easiest thing you're going to do today. Call 1-800-777-4AIS or AISinsurance.com/Rob. Don't make your next insurance payment until you check out the rates with AIS at AISinsurance.com/Rob. Okay, Steven, let's go ahead and get to our questions tonight.
All right, Survivor Brent wants to know, can the Lesu Four pull it together with their two idols and Mott Singh, the comma eight?
Yeah, I do think, and I think I first heard Mike Bloom say this on the RHAP B&B about, could this be a Samoa-esque season here with the Lesu Four being that group that comes together against this big Galu-esque tribe over at Kama?
Well, so he was really asking the right person, Mike Barassi.
Yes, yes. And Barassi was like, let me tell you a thing or two about Samoa, okay? Yeah, if they would have let me in there, yeah, you would have seen some real fireworks. Russell Hance ain't got nothing on me, I'll tell you. So do you think, is it possible, Stephen, is Lesu the little engine that could
chug it, 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 choo choo? I really think so. I definitely think that we're going to see David right there at the end. I mean, I think maybe Kelly.
David right there is going to be there at the end?
David right there at the end. I'm feeling good about Devins for the long haul. I mean, he was my winner pick, and then I was heartbroken when he eliminated.
You're really calling your shot. So Devins is coming back in.
Devins is tricky because he's such a great narrator. It's hard to gauge. But I think I feel good about Devins for the long haul on this game.
I guess, could we handicap the jailbreak challenge? I mean, who do you think is going to be this person? We have to call it right now. And now give Chris a million knots.
Yeah. Okay. I think Devins. I mean, I'm calling my shot with Devins.
Really, bro?
Yeah, well, Reem is my number. Reem is definitely not my number two. I want Reem. I want Reem as much as anyone.
You think I haven't broke out of jail before, bro? You really think so, dude?
Yeah. You're going to have to start practicing your Devins impression.
You think I haven't done time, hard time, and gotten out?
Yeah.
Been on the lam, bro? So, Devins, does he strike you as a jailbreak guy?
I think Devins was solid in the challenges. He was pretty good. I mean, it's definitely not going to be Keith. Keith,
I don't recall any solid Devins moments from the challenges.
But he was never behind. Devins was not, he wasn't.
Are
like,
we sleeping on Aubrey?
Aubrey could be the person. She's had a lot of experience with Survivor challenges.
I'll tell you what, Big Wendy was no slouch in those challenges.
Big Wendy, even in spite of her like broken ankle, she's like, I mean, obviously, running up these beams and things, she's really a beast.
Swimming, though, I think is her main strength. I don't think there's going to be a water component.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, you've got a lot of competitors. I'm willing to rule out Keith.
Okay. Keith, it doesn't seem like his strong spot. But it seems like if Chris loses, that feels like a win for Keith.
Yeah, exactly. He gets the moral victory that he craved.
Yes, I hate Chris. He's getting on my nerves. I can't stand that guy. I'm not doing it for him. I'm doing it for my family. Screw Chris.
Yeah.
What is his problem? Devins. I don't even like that guy. Okay. Let's go to John. John wants to know, should Kama have thrown the immunity to blindside Joe? It's a little hard to throw the challenge too when Joe's doing everything.
When Joe is literally entirely responsible for the challenge, they would have to like restrain Joe.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with, when he was hitting tossing the rock like Chris Noble.
Oh my God, that was something. But Gavin right in there with some rock tossing.
Yeah, both doing a great job. Okay,
just like the Cleveland Browns, just right in there with the.
that's right. Yeah. Okay, what about Fiona?
Fiona, would it not have been a good plan for Lauren to use her idol unless you could get out whoever they wanted?
Well,
I've heard a lot of people on Twitter saying you had two idols, not one of them were used. It's kind of risky with this potential rock draw.
Yeah, I guess so. But do you feel like that Lauren should have played her idol here?
I don't know. I think it would have been a real big guess. You know, it's 4-4. You know that you're a potential limit target. If it does go down to rocks, you're still one of eight. I don't know. I don't think it's my instinct is that no, she shouldn't, but I don't think it's like as obvious as maybe my gut says it is.
I don't think she should have used the idol. I thought that both her and Kelly did the right thing tonight by not playing their idol. And I thought that their Big Wendy plan was sound and also, you know, executed well. And, you know, if it seemed like things were going sideways leading up to the vote, both of them had their idols and could have played it. But I think that they were feeling like everything was going according to form.
Well, they were right.
Yeah. So if they were right, it means they made the right decision.
That's exactly what we say. If things worked out in your favor, then you were correct in everything you did.
Then you did it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Stacked. NFL wants to, if Aubrey makes it to tribal, do you think she can still use her idol
no,
in the vote?
It is dead. That is done. And I think that Dalton Ross had tweeted that he is going to have it the answer in his recap. But I think that our rampant speculation, I think, is sound. And I would be very surprised if we hear anything else other than that Aubrey's idol is done. I think that there is a potential that if Aubrey comes back into the game, maybe she could use it as a fake idol, but I do believe that its powers, once you walk through that the portal, whatever the archway is, all your stuff.
I'm really excited about the reveal next week. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be really fun just to see people's like lose their minds when the eliminated players come back.
Yeah. How do you think it's going to go down? Because it looked like that they're bringing them out like, hey, look who's here. And so do you think that it's going to be like, OK, everybody just like, pop a squat, sit down and now we're going to watch this all play out? Or do you think there's not going to be any sort of like, you know, this tribe is going to compete against the players that are in the game for something?
I mean, I wish it were the latter. I think that would be really fun. I mean, that was fun in Pearl Islands, where they just really, you know, they won and they, you know, they had to win their way back in the game. I thought that was really fun and you know, because it just showed how much they wanted it. But I ultimately do not think that is what is going to happen, because clearly they want someone from the edge of extinction to come back into the game. Mm-hmm. They don't want to risk that not happening. So obviously, you know,
the knots that are happening to Chris.
Not exactly. Always listening for your puns. My hope is, I hope that there's like a ceremonial lighting of a torch. Like you have re-entered this game.
Re-entered the game, come back in with a torch.
Yeah. I think that could be cool. It probably won't happen. Probably just at tribal council, that person will have to relight their torch, which itself would be kind of cool.
Yes. All right, Stephen, let's take this question from Edric. Says, if Manu voted for Dan DeSilva, that's the war dog, instead of Lauren, which one of David, Kelly, or Lauren would have flipped at the revote, if any? Well, Lauren was the one that said that she would flip. She's like, I'm not going on rocks for war dog.
Yeah, you do wonder if it had been like a double flip.
Yeah. Interestingly, like both tribes had the same sort of takeaway of, you know, voting for. Well, actually, no. So it would have been if that we saw some talk. I think it was Kelly saying like, hey, let's vote for Victoria. And it seems like that's a little on the nose of, hey, let's just vote for the young woman in the group.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it did not work out for the Manu side, as that Lauren was not the person that was going to get them to flip.
Yeah, it was interesting that I really respected that Kelly could both be really annoyed at how Wardog handled the conversation where he told him to shut her down, and also recognize that he actually had the correct plan. The way she handled that was really perfect.
No, it made a lot of sense what he was talking about. Okay. Yeah. Stephen, what's this all about? You and Christian Hubicki going back and forth on Twitter.
Yeah, so Christian writes, this is we responded to something I said about Joe and the no-caller tribe, how Joe's only right, pre-merge losses were on the no-caller tribe in his three-season stint. Christian writes, this is a very astute observation. Hi, Stephen, I find you very smart. Hashtag Scotch. I wrote back, in all caps, ditto. Christian writes, we should have a Survivor podcast because we think we're so smart but have never won. We should call it the Know-It-Alls. It would be an ironic moniker. Ironic moniker. He's so great. Isn't he great?
He's great.
Just remember, I've got options, Rob.
Okay. Why was he hashtag Scotch?
I think that probably means he had a drink of scotch.
Oh, okay. When people start drinking scotch, that Stephen Fishback starts sounding really smart. He's making a lot of sense. Okay. Let's see. We got anything else? Oh, Joe Daly. If Wendy is that my brother Joe, dude? Joe Daly. If Wendy was given the option to go left to get back in the game or go right to free more chickens, what do you think she would do?
That's an interesting question. What do you think?
What is she, the Daenerys Targaryen of chickens?
I mean,
that's her of chains.
I know that we're not allowed
the mother
to
of
talk,
chickens
to talk about the Sia stuff anymore. And like, oh my God, she's going for the Sia money is like a very cold take at this point.
Do you think
that she loses out on the possibility of Sia money by being out pre-merge, that like Sia is not going to even remember who Wendy is by the time of the finale?
So there's a place called the Edge of Extinction where players
No chickens on the Edge of Extinction.
Oh, they will find their way to the Edge of Extinction. That if Wendy is on the Edge of Extinction for the rest of the season, there will be like a crate that will show up and Keith will open it up like, it's chickens. And then Wendy's, oh no.
She
build
that
a boat
happens.
And then push them out into the ocean.
I hope that's what happens.
Yeah, so it'll be more drama there. Okay.
Yeah.
What about Will?
Will Donald wants to know, it seems the golden boy Joey Amazing has ditched his prior plan of trying to not look like the challenge beast that he is. Yeah, that was a very short-lived plan. Do you think just making an alliance with Julia is enough for him, or will he have to step his social game up even more?
here's the way I'd like to rephrase that question. First immunity challenge, Stephen.
Yeah.
Okay? Is Joe all in? Or,
yeah, of course.
Yeah. So there's no other course of action for Joe. Joe is in it to win every immunity from here on out. Individual immunity.
That would be so dumb. The idea that like Joe should deliberately throw challenges to me is so out there, because it's not like they're going to forget who he is. Oh, he lost a challenge, so he's obviously not a threat anymore. No, this is like an opportunity to get rid of the threat.
But he's not going to win 11 in a row. So that the first time that he's, I mean, you yourself in Tokachin.
That's right. All the more reason. Oh, go ahead.
So Tyson comes out of the gate, wins first couple of advantages or first couple of immunities. What do you do? First time he loses one. Oh, we got to take the shot tonight.
Yeah. Tyson could have won out. Like, he lost the shuffleboard competition by a hair because it was raining out. Mm-hmm. And like, he probably would have won every subsequent challenge. So I don't think it's actually impossible.
So Joe goes out, wins an individual immunity on the first week. It's just like, here we go again. We got to vote out Joey Amazing. It's like that there has to be a different way. This is the definition of insanity of he won, I think, the first two out of the gate in Worlds Apart. He won the first four out of the gate. If he wins the first eight out of the gate this season, I don't know. Does that get him to Final Four? I don't know. But as soon as he doesn't have immunity, they're going to vote him out.
But I think he's doing the only thing he can. Like I said, you know, I think his strategy of making other people feel like they're targets and therefore they need him is probably the best strategy for him. I don't think now, deliberately losing challenges is a great strategy for him.
The thing that I will say, his saving grace is, as of next week, these players are going to know about the Edge of Extinction. So
yeah.
Joe
yeah.
is in a position of like, okay, vote me out.
Yeah, I'll see you soon. Exactly.
Yeah.
I won't have to play the game, and then I will come back stronger than ever before.
Yes. If you strike me down, I will return more powerful. I'm in on Joe should win all the challenges, and then when they vote him out, go to Edge of Extinction, and then win the challenge to come back in.
Yeah. And that's why there was some chatter with, you know, Survivor Joe Island, because like this twist really, really helps Joe out a lot.
I made both my winner pick.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the fact is people are going to be much more hesitant to vote him out, knowing that he's very likely to come back. Mm-hmm. And
they'll go after the biggest threat in the game then, Julia.
Exactly. Do you think that if you were in the game, how would Edge of Extinction affect your calculation with Joe?
Well, I mean, I would say that if you now know what it's like there, I kind of feel like, hey, send him to the Edge of Extinction.
Right, wear him
and
down.
Maybe he'll, you know, be really depleted there, where whoever comes back is like, oh no, it's terrible. It's so terrible. I'm like, all right, well, send him there for 20 days and hopefully he doesn't get back in. And hopefully, you know, somebody maybe that's been on a reward who we blindside on, you know, later on in the game ends up, coming back in.
Yeah. I think that's probably the right move.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I don't know if I'd be so afraid of Joe in the game also. I mean, if I was somebody who was working against him, but I kind of feel like that for me as a Survivor player, I like having as many targets in the game as me, because I feel like that whatever game I'm playing, I'm like Julia, I am also a big target in the game. And so that I want to keep as many other targets in the game that people are thinking about, as opposed to voting out all the targets to the point where people are coming after me.
Right. I totally agree.
So I would keep Joe around. I wouldn't be like you, like, Joe's got to go. Can't have Joe around here.
No, you don't even know what you're talking about. It's, you know what? I can't even like.
I can't even with Joe Anglum. I say, Joe, let's go.
That's the name of our podcast. You know, after I started the Know It Alls with Christian Ubicki,
hashtag Scotch. I
can't even with Joe Anglum.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do a couple more questions. All right, what about Adrian?
All right, Adrian wants to know, can you guys lay this rumor to rest?
Ooh.
If anyone loses the EOE challenge next week, they don't automatically claim a seat on the jury.
I've never heard this before.
I have heard this. I am assuming after the person gets back in, then the jury truly starts. People believe everyone will be part of the jury. I've heard that if you wait until the end, you will be part of the jury. It does seem nutty that there would be a 15-person jury. They'll probably just let one more person back in, right, towards the end of the game.
I would think that there'll be somebody's coming in now, and I think somebody's coming back in later. But I guess the question is, to the losers of this challenge next week, do you think they are going to go back to Edge of Extinction? Or
oh yeah, definitely.
Okay. So why not? If anyone loses the challenge next week, they don't automatically claim a seat on the jury. So
so you're thinking that they might? That's interesting. That they might just like. Purge Edge of Extinction and then kind of restart.
I mean, I think that's a possibility. I mean, I don't want to go, you know, off of just like, you know, speculation. Internet speculation. I think that's how you get yourself into trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. We don't want to be in trouble here.
We'll see. Here's my plan. Let's watch the show next week and see what happens.
Oh, I'll do that. That's a good plan.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Stephen, what about Gabriella?
Gabriella wants to know, putting aside how much we love Aubrey, I can't see. Okay,
was it the right move for Victoria? Gabrielle, let me tell you something. Steven gave the fishy to Victoria. So, of course, he thinks it's the right move.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Any downside in this move for the trifecta of Victoria and Gavin and Eric?
Yeah, one big downside is they lose a player who is loyal to them, who desperately wants to ally with them, and who is going to be a big target at the merge. I do think the threat of having all four returning players left in the game is a huge one, and they would be absolute morons to let all four players stay in the game. The four returning players, if they were in the game, would be as big a voting block as any of the remaining tribes, except for Kama, which is five. There'd be four returning players, which would be more players that, you know, as many players that are on Lesu, as many players that are as are on Manu. I think it's like you've got to get one of them out while you have the chance, or you deserve the humiliation that will happen to you after the merge.
Yeah, I think it was the right move, because I really do think that the direction that we're heading is that it's going to be whatever returning players are left plus whoever is left from Lesu and probably Aurora versus the new players. So if you're looking at the game in that way, and I don't know if they're thinking fourth dimensionally on this, but I think that that's the direction that they're headed. I think that was the right move to get rid of Aubrey.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's just like, I mean, the returning player, like, you forget when you're in the game how much those bonds from outside the game are going to end up affecting things. I remember, like, one of my biggest regrets from Cambodia is not remembering the bonds that existed between the people, you know, because you're like in the game and you think of the people and their situation within the game itself, and you forget, like, oh, Tosh and Spencer are actually going to be really tight. It seems so obvious when you say it now outside of the game. And the same is going to be true for Wentworth and Joe, right? Like, they are going to be really tight. And so I think that, you know, it's nutty to, it would be nutty to let these people stay in the game. And you assume that David and Aubrey know each other.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that David and Aubrey are probably like friends in real life, whereas that Kelly and Joe played Survivor together. But I feel like that they have had like differences together. So maybe they're not necessarily on the same page. But I feel like that, you know, just from like socially being places with David and Aubrey, like they are definitely friendly.
Yeah. And we have those like Survivor nerd meetups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So is that for just the nerds from Survivor meetup?
Yeah, that's why you haven't been invited, because you're not nerdy enough.
I guess so. That's what I'll tell myself when I'm crying going to sleep tonight. Let's do a couple more questions. Lorenzo, now that the merge is coming up, what's the best move for Joe? Should he and Aurora try to get in with Lesu and try to pull off the Edge of Extinction returnee to make 7? Lorenzo, it's almost as if you're listening to this podcast. It's exactly what I think.
Yeah. That's basically
it's
exactly
a great idea.
What you said.
I love it.
You're going to Samoa.
You're going to Samoa, Lorenzo.
All right, Shaylin Yeager wants to know, what do you guys think about Aubrey's edit so far? Uh-oh. Can we talk? Can we continue on this question?
Like so far, this like after
we're
being
talking about the edit,
okay.
She got a multi-season flashback about the idol and gets gifted an extra vote, and then goes out in a JT-like fashion with both in her pocket. Do we think she comes back on to redeem herself? If not, what is going on? I don't see her being the person who comes back.
Yeah, I think she got voted out, and then talking about. I wish we would have spent more time with Aubrey on the Edge of Extinction. It was like I felt like that we don't really get final words. Like we saw like a couple seconds with her when she got to the Edge of Extinction, but I wish we would have got a little bit more time to process this.
Yeah, I think that Aubrey is a great character. She's a beloved character.
Great
a big
narrator.
Player. Great narrator.
The Halloween thing I thought was a little forced of like, hey, I'm a witch and who are my black cats here? And it's Halloween night. I'm David S. Pumpkins. Any questions?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't mind that stuff. Like it was better than, you know, like some of the Ryan's, you know.
That's a ways back.
But I do think that in general Aubrey was just, she's just like a good narrator. She's someone that the viewers already care about.
She's a great narrator.
Yeah, great narrator. You bring back someone like Aubrey, and you know, you want to give her, you know, she's very open with her emotions. She's very strategically astute. Of course you're going to give her a lot of confessionals.
Do you think, Stephen, will we see Aubrey 4.0?
I don't know. That's a tough one. Yeah, why not? Sure. Yeah, I'll send it to Samoa.
Send it to Samoa. Aubrey 4.0. Yeah, why not? Why not?
Of the four returnees so far, whose performance do you think has most guaranteed them a future invite?
David Wright.
I think David Wright, too. But I would say Aubrey is
But I would
second.
Say that David Wright, with the biggest reason being that this is only the second time out for David Wright. So
right. Third for everybody else.
It would be the fourth time out for everybody else that we're talking about. And for David, you know, he's done very well, been a big presence in the season. Only his second time out still. So I feel like that of those four, I would say that he'd be the most likely to return again.
He had a very funny confessional today, where he was talking about how all of his friends are married and have families, and all he has is a two-bedroom apartment and a bookshelf with some DVDs on it. Do you think David is still watching DVDs? Is he not streaming?
Maybe it's streaming? DVDs of Family Guy seasons and stuff like that. He's worked on. I did feel like that was a weird where are we going with this? I like it's like I need to go find the idol because that I find you know I don't have the idol. And in my real life, all I have is a 2-bedroom apartment and a shelf full of DVDs. And I'm and it was a weird bit to get when it didn't result in him ultimately even finding the idol.
Yeah. I mean, it was a strange, it really felt like the start of a growth narrative, which is never a great thing on us. But like, it could be like a winner's quote. That could be like, you know, a winner's quote.
I've got a bookshelf full of DVDs. Yeah,
now I can buy a second bookshelf with this million.
Yeah.
More DVD. I can finally start streaming. I can finally start downloading movies.
I should have had CBS All Access this whole time. Okay. All right. Steven. Soy wants to know, is Big Wendy an all-star? Have you noticed that in recent seasons, there are many pre-merge boots worthy of making a return? How quickly Big Wendy could be at the merge in but 7 days?
Yeah. I think that if Big Wendy does not win her way back into the game, it is unlikely she would return.
I think Big Wendy is a big character. And if they did some sort of whatever the theme is for a returning player season, I think that she would definitely be in strong consideration because she was such a great TV character.
Yes, great TV character for sure.
I know people love counting the confessionals. I think Big Wendy might be number one on the season.
Wow. Would you cast her over Reem?
Boy, I love Reem. I love Reem, but I think that the body of work there for Big Wendy, I think, with all due respect to my favorite Reem, I think that
Wendy's got the chicken sabotage. She's got the Flint theft.
Yeah. She was great. Big Wendy.
A lot of thefts, really.
Big Wendy was fantastic. And I believe there's still more to come with Big Wendy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Scott, let's do this last question and then let's start to wrap it up. Steven, what does Kieran have to say?
All right. Kieran wants to know, shouldn't Survivor wait one more vote?
Oh, wait. Let's do that one question. Okay.
One more vote until they merge, because with someone coming back this week, there will be a merge with 13 people. I think a merge with 13 is
that's what Survivor likes to do.
Yeah, they like these big, wild merges. 13 is fun to merge with an odd number. Inherently, there's going to be, I don't know why it's fun, but it is.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. What's the difference? Merge with 12, merge with 13.
I think they they like to get to the merge faster. They like these big, crazy merges with a lot of people. The only real downside is then you have like 6 challenges that are just people standing in a line holding balls because, they got to like somehow accommodate all the people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, other than that, I'm a fan.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about what else we have going on. Oh, it's the RHAP Philly Know-It-Alls official t-shirt available at RHAPstore.com.
Oh, I love it.
Brian Malloy, our very talented designer, has gone to work again, and the magic has struck one more time with the official shirt of the Philly Know-It-Alls. Stephen Fishbeck and I are going to be in Philadelphia on April 17th at a sold out show coming up to do the Know-It-Alls with a really incredible cast of characters down in Philadelphia. But if you want to get your hands on the official Philly Know-It-Alls t-shirt, go to rhapstore.com, available in 2 different shades of green, and then also in the 3/4 length softball tee in red and blue, available at rhapstore.com. If you want to get it before the Philly Know-It-Alls, especially for the 3/4 length shirt, you got to get your order in tonight or tomorrow. If you want to, the other t-shirts, the short sleeve shirts, you got a little bit more time. Steven Fishback will call you personally for every t-shirt sold.
Yes, I will 100% commit to that. Yeah.
No, that is a joke. Okay. All right.
Tell me, well, who's coming?
Oh, you know what? That a lot of people, and we don't have another 2 hours in the show for me to say everybody. Gabby Pascuzzi will be my guest to talk about the 2-hour episode. Really excited to catch up with Gabby. Haven't talked to her since her recent appearance on the Love Know-It-Alls, which was so well received. Everybody was so pumped up that the Love Know-It-Alls came back for a Valentine's Day special. So Gabby is going to be with me tomorrow. Get your questions in. The RJP V&B, it's going to be the Real Weird Sisters with Mike Barassi on this week's episode.
No, that joke is still really funny for me.
It's, anytime Barassi comes up, it's funny, but it'll be Liana Boris will be with the Real Weird Sisters on the RJP B&B this week in our Survivor podcast feed. And then Nick Iadanza, the new dad, Nick Iadanza, is going to talk to us about everything going on our feedback show this week. Get your feedback questions in robinswebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. Not the Punch Drunk Sports hotline for anybody who's confused. The David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis are going to talk about why Aubrey lost and why Big Wendy lost. It'll be a jam-packed why blank lost this week. Then, of course, robinswebsite.com/patron. That's the way that you can go ahead and become a part of our Robins Podcast patron community. Get even more involved in everything we're doing here on Robins Podcast in our various Facebook groups. Get access to our secret patron only podcast feed where we talk about what's really going on around here. Everything else that we're doing, you can check it out, and all sorts of incentives are available for you to check out. Help keep this podcast engine running behind everything that we do. robhasawebsite.com/patron. Okay.
Wait, I need to promote Paraphrase before we wrap it up.
Okay.
Sam Lipsight, still on the latest episode. As you know, I do one every 2 weeks.
Yes.
Well, this is really cool. Our friend, Nick Iadanza, and your future your imminent podcast guest, he emailed me. He's going to use the latest episode of Paraphrase featuring Sam Lipsight reading, talking about his book, Hark, in his classroom. He thought it was such a good example of an author discussing their work that he is going to use it as a pedagogical tool. So now I can say, it being used in classrooms around the world.
A classroom somewhere in the world.
But it's far away in the world. I feel like the fact that it's far away should matter.
It should matter.
I need one more classroom somewhere other than Australia. So if there's any teachers out there who could use my podcast once in somewhere other than Australia.
Does it need to be that same episode? It could be any episode.
No. Then I can just say the international renowned, pedagogical tool.
Right.
Yeah. Internationally renowned. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Stephen, how can people find the Paraphrase podcast?
They go to paraphrasepodcast.com or on iTunes, search or your podcast reader of choice. Look for Paraphrase.
Okay. Paraphrase podcast with Stephen Fishback. Okay. Anything else, Stephen? We gave read Stephen's blog. I follow Stephen on Twitter at Stephen Fishback.
Who gets the Sesti?
That's not really a thing. I really think that in the very first episode of Survivor Know It Alls, in which is like 6 years ago, I think we said, okay, I'll say who played the worst. I'll call that the Sesti. You've really clung to this.
I ask you because the way like I don't think you we rib each other a lot and we like make fun of each other a lot. But I think I rarely see you truly annoyed, except for the brief flash of a second after I ask you who gives the session.
Yes.
Like there's something that comes in your eyes like, Steven?
Yeah. If I have to say who played the worst tonight without being voted out, I don't know.
It's tricky. Yeah,
I don't know. Usually the person who played the worst gets voted out.
But you felt like Julia had a bad night.
I don't think she had a bad night. I just thought that when Joe is like, hey, you're smart and beautiful and you're a med student and hey, you're a big threat. And she's like, wait a second, I am a big threat. It's like, you're still not a big threat. She's still not a big threat.
Yeah, we don't know. It's hard to say.
I mean, based on the show that I've seen, nobody is talking about Julia as a threat.
Yeah, but they might. They could start.
I guess they could, but by definition, then that does not make her a big threat.
Yeah.
You know, a big threat is somebody that people are saying, like, hey, this person is about to, if we don't stop them right now, they're going to win the game.
Yeah.
Like, literally, nobody is talking about her.
None that we've seen. You know, you only see a very... This is. Let me tell you about how reality shows work. They film a lot, but they show very little.
But they show you the stuff that's supposed to end up mattering.
That's true. They do show you the stuff that matters.
Okay. All right. Steven, great job once again.
That was fun. It was a great episode. Great episode. Great episode of the show,
I'm
Survivor.
I'm really excited about the trajectory of the season.
Yeah, it's definitely on its way up.
Okay, on its way up. We'll see. Maybe the other shoe will drop next week. We'll see what happens, but we'll be back 1 week from tonight to talk about it all. Check out everything that we're doing on robhasawebsite.com. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Take care, everybody. Have a good one.
Bye. Bye.
Special thanks to our friends over at TrueCar for sponsoring this episode of Rob Has a Podcast. 60 seconds, that's exactly how long this commercial is going to last. You know what else you could do in about a minute? You can get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it could take you to floss your teeth, pet your dog, pet chickens, or listen to the sound of my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or from home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter the license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. And after that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need so there's no surprises. And then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today.